This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, your host. Joining me for more Aston Villa propaganda, Mr. Chris Bird, Mr. Phil Shaw. Glory to the Villa.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Hello.
Victorious we are as a club now. 2 wins on the trot. What more can you ask for? That's the minimum you could ask for after 1 win in 8 games in all competitions, I would probably add. But all is good again, or is it? We shall discuss that when we look back at... Was this the game that we've been prophesizing that we would beat somebody 4-0? Or were we actually talking about more of a, like a 6 or 7-0?
Was that maybe what that's we classed to come. As a...
Yeah, I hope
that's
so.
What we really classed as a beating. This is just getting our sights in, isn't it? Anyway, we'll look back at the Saints game as well as catching up on the latest filler news and the 3 points and media muppetry as per usual. How are you gents doing? Anything happening?
I'm very well. I think it's you're the one who's had the dramatic weekend, haven't you? With your nice trip away when you weren't meant to be in Tenerife.
I just ended up in a country I shouldn't have been in. I still have got no idea how it happened.
But all good.
I was due to go away for... it's kind of a family lads weekend. It's kind of a tradition, like in March, to get some sun, you know, for a long weekend. It's cheap, cheerful. Normally I do it, like, I don't know, once every other year because of the whole COVID lockdown. I thought, yeah, let's do it this time. So I've been talking about it with these various people and planning it and booking things around it and, you know, making sure it all syncs up. And anyway, I went, flew to Tenerife, landed, this is on Thursday, before the Southampton game, and I'm dropping people notes and not getting any replies, and then I'm on the phone to one of my family members, and I'm saying, oh, where are you? As in, where are you in Tenerife? And it's like, oh, you know, doing some accounts or something. I said, what do you mean? He said, where are you? I said, I'm in Tenerife. He said, what the fuck are you doing there? And that's when the penny drops that it's next week.
Oh, dear.
So there I was with no accommodation or anything. So I was like, well, you know, did a bit of Googling. I can get a flight back tomorrow, like 30 quid or whatever it was. Or we can just go with this and then think about whether we go again next week. So luckily, something popped up on Airbnb, like within 10 minutes of me searching it. And it was like, it was a good place, actually. Great spot, balcony overlooking the sea and the mountains in the background. It was like almost like half the price of the cheapest hotel that was left. But anyways, so I just entertained myself for the weekend. So I, you know, hired an e-bike, and that was brilliant. First time I've ever used an e-bike. Went to a driving range and kind of made the best of the weather. And here I am back. And the reason, the only reason I can think why I did this was because I was sitting on the Holt End in that chilly wind against Watford. And my brain, I think, had wishful thinking saying, we can't watch this shower shit again in these conditions when Tenerife set. And for some reason, my brain conveniently switched that Southampton game to when Tenerife was. So I, you know, moved my ticket on and thought, well, at least I'm saved of that. that. And A, that wasn't the weekend. And B, Villa's best performance of the season, probably.
Oh, comfortably.
Am I right?
I would say it's definitely at Villa Park, yeah. Definitely at Villa Park.
Yeah. So anyway, it's sod's law that I just wish Phil was there to join me on that holiday, but never mind.
What, the caddy for you?
What, on a driving range? when you got a driving range and there's a mountain, and it was like, you know, €1 for a bucket of 25 balls, and, you know, they did me a solid by lending me some clubs for €3, and it was, you know, it's a great place, great little bar they've got there. Why can't life be about value anywhere else in England? You're getting stung through the backside to play any kind of golf. But anyway, how are you, Phil, anyway?
No, all good. Just there's a sign, I'm getting older now. Someone donated us an air fryer, and it's like, it's revolutionary. People, I'm just trying to see what things I can cook in it now. Just throwing everything into it, whether it's frozen or not.
I have an air fryer. Was one of the first things I bought in lockdown, and it is pretty groovy, actually. I'm a big advocate of the air fryer. Good for veg, everything. Anyway, this isn't a cooking program. This is Aston Villa podcast. And let's talk about what's been going on. I think it's time for some news. We can talk about the price of air fryers, or we can catch up on the Villa news.
I think we'll just get on with the Villa news, as you've both got air fryers now, so it's not much to talk about.
Masters of the air fryer. All right, Villa's annual accounts came out. I was too busy to look at them. give me in a nutshell what's happening. I know we're losing money because it's the COVID situation. Because it's so, you know, it can't really draw, because it's such an anomaly. And obviously you're missing the revenue of the gate receipts. Even though it's mainly TV rights money that's the big important thing. Is there any headlines that we should be telling the folks who haven't actually looked at them yet?
Well, the headline is, it just shows the scale of the money that Wes Edens and Nassif Suarez are putting in to the club. But the real headline that I took out of it was, as far as revenue goes, because you think that Villa are getting closer to the big six or the Super League six, but the team that brought in the least money out of the Super League six, so the last place out of them, Arsenal, still brought in £110 million more in revenue in season 2021 than Villa did. So even though it was a record year for revenue for Villa, they're still £110 million behind Arsenal. So that it just shows that the scale of the job's still ahead.
And a lot of that, it's just the scale of the international market, which Villa really haven't got a big footprint in. I know that from the demographics of my site, you know, which is predominantly UK. And, you know, I know the demographics of a major Arsenal site, and it's the UK demographic is it's about 25% less than, you know, my UK a demographic, which suggests they have a huge, you know, other areas like Asia and the States, etc. So that's where we have to catch up on the likes of those clubs in terms of increasing revenue as well.
And yeah, because obviously they can sell a lot more shirts. Their ground is big. You know, they're getting, 20,000 more every week at the Emirates, etc. It all adds up. And then obviously the corporate deals they can do, shirt sponsorships, etc., strategic partnerships, all of that, it all comes into it, doesn't it?
Yeah. Speaking of such things, Cazoo are staying the front of shirt sponsor. We have to say things like that. We can't just say shirt sponsor now.
They put sponsors everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. Maybe they should have dropped the Chinese betting sponsor on the arms for that game against Southampton, since the Chinese blocked the Premier League games for this weekend because of our show of solidarity to the Ukraine, which that kind of tells you all you need to know there.
Mm.
There will be no more Cazoo Derby, will they? Because they seem to be leading
in the Premier League, you mean?
I think that's what Cazoo are kind of implying there. They've looked into the future and it doesn't look good for Everton, so they're pulling that one. In terms of the fitness of the squad, Traore returned for the Saints games on the bench. Carney Chukwuemeka is expected back for Leeds, although I think that's still a bit of a 50-50 job.
Yep.
Akonza and Dean going to be back after their COVID?
They haven't confirmed it. It's 5 days, isn't it? You have to isolate now. So it's whether or not they are, you know, if they've tested themselves out.
Right. So is that still a coin toss? Well, at the time of the recording this show, yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Meanwhile, Nakamba was confirmed in the Steven Gerrard press conference as being around 3 to 4 weeks away. So probably won't see him until April. Meanwhile, Aston Villa are being used as collateral in the election of, what's the president's name?
It's Miguel Pinto Lisboa.
Of?
Vitória Guimarães.
Who has promised that he, if he is re-elected, he will bring in a proposed partnership as with Aston Villa, which is something that's been muted since probably about May last year. Wes Edens has been in talks with Victoria regarding you know, being under the umbrella of V Sports and having a kind of a mutually beneficial, you know, it's kind of where you have a player exchange and, you know, loaning system with the Portuguese club. We shall see how that goes. But I don't know if Christian Perslow is happy with that, if that letter that was leaked by Mr. Pinto Lisboa is legit. It's not really how you should do business.
Not with a strategic partnership like that.
Yeah, he may find that punted. A little bit of trivia. Villa once played them in the UEFA Cup.
Many moons ago.
1983, Victoria actually won the first leg 1-0, and Villa, at the return at Villa Park, slapped them 5-0 in the return game to win 5-1 on aggregate. So there you go. There's the link, historical link, between the two clubs. Moving on, Villa have signed 16-year-old Northern Ireland attacking midfielder, stroke striker, would you say? I've never seen him play. Omari Kellerman from Derby for $600,000, which I'm sure Derby desperately needed, obviously with their circumstances. Mm-hmm. So Phil Shaw will keep an eye on him for you.
Yeah. Like I said, anybody any good over here disappears over to the mainland before they get to play anywhere here. So I'll be interested to see him play.
Yeah. In terms of loans, Archer continues and scored again for Preston in their 2-1 win against Bournemouth. I watched the, you know, the goal. It's just lethal, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's just instinctive. Just instinctive.
I can't remember a young player who's come through at Villa who was that clinical. You think about some of our young strikers, like, you know, Byfield, Vassell, people like that, yeah. Gabby, they were never that level in front of goal.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Vassell and Gabby, you know, they scored a shitload of goals in the youth team, but, you know, when they played for the full team, you would never label them natural finishers, Like, not even, he wouldn't even start to think about it, because Gabby, most of his goals were miskicked. And, you know, I think he's actually admitted he wasn't the best striker of a ball, but this chap, it's uncanny what he does. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Trezeguet has scored 4 goals in 4 appearances over in Istanbul.
He's doing well.
Yeah, Basaksehir. So hopefully that will give him a price tag.
Or stake your claim to stick around, perhaps.
No. Oh, you're still fucking Chris Budd still thinks Traore and Trezeguet are the future.
I mean, we can have no subs if you prefer. I know you don't like having anybody on the bench. And
Archer, he's coming back. Bring on Archer or bring on Trezeguet. I'll let you decide.
You'd have him in
the
squad.
5 minutes. Think about
him. It was a very young bench on Saturday, David.
You can take your I Love Trezeguet t-shirt off now.
It's having a strong squad.
Yeah, so do I. So Trezeguet needs to stay in Turkey.
And play a bunch of 15-year-olds.
Yeah. And David, by the way, I don't
play
want any
the kids, Michael. That's what we can call you now.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Just keep Trezeguet away. That's my mantra here. I'm not talking about playing the kids. By the way, I would play Archer over him 100%.
There you go. You're meant to send Trezeguet alone in the first half of the season when he's useless, and again get him for the end of the season, where it's his time
for our
to shine.
Grand finale.
Yeah, when he starts scoring 4 in 4, but never mind. But yeah, realistically, look at where the club's going. Look at the kind of rise in ambition. I can't see Trezeguet getting in a first 11 regularly or being, you know, proper impact sub. You know, we've got Bailey on the bench. We've got Buendia on the bench. It's you know, the depth's getting stronger. So my train of thought is just, my train of thought is just being realistic on the Trezeguet matter, because, you know, there's lots of wasted minutes and column inches on talking about the loan players when potentially you'll never see them in a Villa shirt again. Archer, though, that's the intriguing one because of what's in front of him.
I suppose of all the guys out on loan, it's senior players, junior players, etc. He's the one you think there's actually a bit of upside there.
Yeah, but the thing is, he's risen at the time where finally Villa have got two proper forwards, and we haven't had two proper forwards for a long time, like elite forwards. Yeah. So he probably wishes he was born two or three years earlier, but he's that good that he could actually threaten them.
Yeah.
And you know, Ings, you know, he's got a couple of years where he's still probably in his prime. But anyway, we shall see. Meanwhile, the Villa women lost 1-0 at home to Brighton. They're still, is it 12 points clear of the drop?
Yeah, but that's 10 defeats in a row at home.
Is that true?
Yeah.
10 home, they're going to have to burn the Bescot Stadium down, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like getting all their points away.
Oh, yeah, maybe they should play at the $1 trillion stadium or something now as their home patch. Just trying to set things up for gags, but nobody's there with the bat to hit them away.
I've got nothing on Trillion Trophy. Blues with the roof falling down, to be honest.
Right, well, let's get into Media Muppets. Right then, Phil, what's in the Media Muppet trough this week? I haven't even looked at this, so I hope it's a good one.
No, well, it's just a quick one this week.
Put the pressure on.
Yeah, it's one. The headline really annoyed me. The headline was from The Express, and it's Steven Gerrard makes Philip Coutinho injury joke after Aston Villa stars masterclass. Gerrard making an injury joke about Coutinho. After the Saints game, injury and Coutinho are the last two things you want to be hearing in the same sentence. But, of course, this refers to a comment by Gerrard after the game when he was referring to the Brazilian magician. He goes, "He is the reason I have six screws in my left groin and I'm probably on my way to a new hip." Those type of players can do that.
That's from was it last week or
it was after the game?
No,
it was post-match comments.
Yeah, it was after the game, so he was just talking about how Coutinho used to turn him in training. But it was just that headline's just injury. There's no reason to injury. If you want to see how that headline should be written, Matt Meyer did it in the Express and Star, and he just wrote it properly. He wrote, "Aston Villa boss Steven Gerrard, Felipe Coutinho has set me on a course for a hip replacement," which I think is a pretty good headline. Decent, tells you the truth of the matter, yeah. And it's quite funny. So,
and his post-match, Gerrard went, "I think Coutinho basically ended my career." That would have maybe been a better headline.
Right, 3 points. Point number one, it's the call to arms by the FA, Premier League and EFL backing the police's proposal of banning orders for possession and abuse of cocaine at football games, which is set to be approved. Seems to be rife nowadays.
And it's getting the column inches, isn't it, all of a sudden as well, after that incident?
Yeah, I mean, it's always
Forest.
Been around.
We've been talking about
around
it for a while.
And about. I mean, I remember 2007 when I got, you know, when I went to see Juventus and was in with the Drugi, and somebody who I'd seen do like three lines of coke, I got into a fight with him. He got into a fight with me, but his eyes were literally popping out of his skull. It was ridiculous. And, you know, the fight was just like, they'd know, because it was right in the middle of the Drugi, and that, obviously I was a stranger. It's like, who the fuck are you? But that's another story, which I still haven't told. It's a classic. But that's when I thought, this is what they do in Italian football, smoke a load of weed and do a load of coke. But it seems to be more and more prevalent in English games now, especially the coke side of things. I bet it's really shit coke as well.
That'd be cheap and horrible. Fucking crap.
Which isn't a good look. I mean, if you're doing really good coke, you're probably not going to football games, to be honest. And getting into aggro and shit.
Well, there was the incident, wasn't there, at Forest the other week with the Leicester lad, who sort of said afterwards, and you know, he's been since jailed and said, I'd obviously been drinking since early in the morning and I'd done a shed load of gear as well. And I mean, I've seen it at games plenty of times, home and away. And obviously there was all the incidents with, you know, the Euros last summer with England fans just openly doing gear in the stadium, outside the stadium, etc.
I suppose it's just on the lash, isn't it? Just trying to... One of the reasons is just you need an upper, don't you? After drink is ultimately a downer. So,
well, Keenan Davis nearly gave him an upper. I mean, if that steward hadn't been there, he would have been uppered right into the front row of the crowd.
Yeah. Oh, sorry, you're referring to Forest Leicester, the FA Cup game.
Yeah, and there was an operation, wasn't there, at the Carabao Cup final between Chelsea and Liverpool, where swabs were taken on a number of the trains heading to London from Liverpool, and they said cocaine was found on every single train and in most carriages.
Wow. So yeah, it's a problem, and now it's being tackled seemingly. Meanwhile, point number two, sad news from Mexico. How did this kick off? I was away when I saw this kind of on Twitter, but is it basically just clashes between two sets of fans in a Mexican game?
Yeah, but really nasty ones. Yeah, very, very, very bad.
Who was it? Atlas and...
Querétaro, was it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
Querétaro. And how many people died from this?
There's no official reports of anybody dying from it. The official reports so far stated that 26 people were injured and 3 critically. But the graphic video evidence that's freely available and first-hand accounts that you can find would suggest that there is more serious casualties.
Because the thing I saw in passing was saying it was like 17 had passed away.
Yeah, there's been lots of sort of loads of
misinformation.
Yeah, differing reports, yeah. So we'll sort of see. But yeah, started in the stands, spilled out onto the pitch.
Is it being like connected to like criminal gangs and stuff?
Yeah, and like the sort of the very extremist end of the ultras.
Kind of cartel violence.
I think so. There'll be a little bit of that. And apparently, me and Phil have discussed before that one of the gangs had paid off the security at the venue. So one of them were completely tooled up with weapons. The other one had all theirs taken off them.
Right.
Yeah, I think there's a history between these two teams. I think Atlas relegated the other team, a few years ago, and it's just been bad blood since. I mean, it's symptomatic of a problem in Mexico. I mean, reports from the federal government show in the first 10 days of this year alone, there were 648 murders in Mexico.
Wow.
So it's just
cartels, though, isn't it, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's just spilling into football now. I mean, the sadly ironic thing about the build-up to this game was the Liga MX had decided that in the wake of the war between Russia and Ukraine to name this tournament the Shout for Peace 2022.
That's not good.
The irony of that.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, when we relegate Newcastle every other year, it's just... it just breaks out on Twitter, doesn't it? There's no people getting tooled up and fighting.
I mean, to give you an idea of how serious it still is, I mean, they've already announced that 7 men that are lying injured in hospital, whenever they are released and able to go back across state lines, they're going to be given a police escort to get them back across to the state lines. So it's really serious.
Right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. Right. Point number three. How did this happen? I mean, I saw a video of Roberto Carlos coming on for a Sunday league team. Was it in Shrewsbury?
Yeah.
Bull in the Barn United. Who signed him for £5 on eBay?
Like a raffle or something?
Yeah. It was a raffle in support of charity Football Beyond Borders that helps disadvantaged young people in the community.
Did he score?
Yes, he scored a penalty, but despite scoring the penalty, he was on the losing side. But the bit that has gone viral afterwards is, as you do in Sunday League football, is after the game you go for a pint, win, lose or draw. So he's with all his teammates and they start asking, you know, oh, who have you played with? What famous players do you still have their numbers and things? So he goes, what about Sergio Ramos? So he FaceTimes Sergio Ramos and there's a great video going around of Sergio Ramos's face just appearing on the phone and, you know, everybody cheering and then he joins in the fun as well.
It's a bit like when Robert Perez turned up and played for Aston Villa and scored.
Great goal, that, wasn't it? As well, I remember that one.
So again, Blackburn,
yeah, and
it was
a cup game, I think. With him hobbling around the pitch.
I mean, this is like former Galactico Roberto Carlos. Villa's version was like former invincible Roberto Perez. Aging comes on, treating us like a Sunday league team. I don't know. Those were the...
dark days.
the beginning of the dark days, that was. Right, Saints at home. After Villa had finally got back to winning ways against Brighton, we've done the business against, you know, two decent mid-table teams.
Yeah, two teams in amongst us.
In the Premier League, yeah.
Yeah, well, Southampton had only lost once in 10 games before playing us.
Yeah, because of the weekend was to show support and stand with Ukraine in the current Putin invasion. The Saints, luckily, their third kit is Ukrainian colours, so they played in that. And
the away fans put on a good showing as well in their way into.
Their fans were all given scarves in that colour as well to obviously hold up for the minute's applause as the Ukrainian flag flew next to the American and Egyptian one. In terms of the lineup, that was the big blow, came out of nowhere, was Lucas Dean and Konsa. We suddenly got the back four back together after Konsa's double game suspension, and he was gone again, and Lucas Dean was gone as well. So you're thinking, real chance to get some momentum, and now we're playing a decent Southampton team. We're missing half of our back four, but I think they had a couple of players missing from their back four as well, didn't they?
Yeah, both teams had problems. I'd imagine Villa's, because it was apparently COVID. It must have been quite a last-minute thing if they're still testing on the morning of the game. So.
Yeah, and Traore was back on the bench. That was deemed a bit of a 50-50 one if we were going to see him back. But obviously, I think those two COVID incidents fast-tracked him back on the bench. He probably wouldn't have featured if that wasn't the case. So Ashley Young came in and Callum Chambers came in. And you're suddenly thinking, I'm not so confident now. But it was a false sense of security, wasn't it, that we were leading Southampton in?
Very much so.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I mean, I'd fancied us to win this one all week. I think just because of the momentum from Brighton, I thought we'll take it into this and the Southampton run has to end somewhere, why not a Villa? But you never expect what happened to happen. You know, a little bit like when we played Derby around about the same time a few years ago. It was kind of the same feeling as that. But, you know, when you saw the team sheet, you thought, they can cause this back four trouble.
You're hoping with Konsa back that we would kick on. But we did anyway.
Yeah.
We don't need Konsa. We can sell him in the summer.
Yeah, it was a really, really, really good performance.
Yeah, they were just all the Villa team were just seemed to be on it from the very first few minutes.
Yeah. And the fact that we got the early goal, which is a great goal, it settled everyone.
I mean, let's start what's made the difference here. I think he's looked at that midfield and he's thinking, the players aren't that bad. I think it's been the system that's been letting us down and where they're appearing, because there's been massive gaps. We've been open to the counter so many times, and that's what's put pressure on, you know, our defence. A lot of the time they've been outnumbered, outgunned, and pulled all over the place. But now you're seeing, it's like, we've seen like McGinn and Ramsey filling in for the fullbacks when they've bombed on, but I think they're a lot more disciplined now and noticeably. Once Cash is in, cutting into that 18-yard box, the opposition 18-yard box, you pretty much know that McGinn's, let's say, holding his line, and vice versa with whether it's Dean or Young on the other side. Ramsey checks back a little bit. But also in this game, noticeably, Douglas Luiz, rather than being like this isolated central DM shielding the defence, it's more of like that. There's like a three, isn't there? And he's like in the middle of a three. It's kind of a diamond.
Yes.
With Coutinho at the top and Luiz is the base. But it's not an outright, you know, you're looking at Coutinho and Luiz a lot more flexible than you would imagine. But I think the starting kind of formation is a diamond, but let's say with a bit more of a flatter three.
Yeah, the back three of the diamond, I think when you haven't got the ball, they probably all tuck in slightly and they leave Coutinho to be like the head of it. So it almost becomes like a 4-3-1-2 ish, because you're playing with two out and out forwards, and it just frees up Coutinho. I think maybe the problem we'd had before that was trying to shoehorn in Coutinho and Buendia, two very similar types of players, and they're great to watch when it's happening, but I think they maybe don't give you enough when you don't have the ball. As you saw at Brighton, when we didn't have the ball, we were much more compact and we could still sort of hurt the opposition, and you saw it at a better level against Southampton where we had the balance, but then when we got on the ball, we really had a bit of firepower.
But the thing about this, you know, if you want to loosely call it a diamond, is Coutinho doesn't stay at the head of the diamond. I mean, early on in this game, before the first goal, he's literally picking it up. I can't remember if it's in his own half, but the only two players, behind him are the two centre backs, and he plays the ball through to Watkins. I think it was one of the first clear chances, but he's playing that quarterback pass out from the back, and you think, wow, you know, Coutinho's dropping deep here, and he actually drops back to play the pass that releases Ings, who sets up Watkins for the opener as well. So he's got a lot more license, it seems. He's not just hovering behind the front two. He's moving around midfield, picking up the ball wherever he can, where there's space. So, he seeks out deep if necessary.
I mean, basically, everything we did that was good offensively pretty much started or ended with Coutinho, which was great to watch.
Because obviously it's hard to man mark him if he's dropping back and picking up so deep.
Yeah.
So that's part of the ploy, I suppose, to have that kind of flexibility of where he can, you know, operate in midfield.
Yeah. Tactically, sorry, Phil, one of the tactical differences as well, I think, from Brighton, even more so against Southampton, was both fullbacks weren't always bombing on. Cash sort of had a little bit more license than Young, but you could see Young almost wanted to go on a few occasions but didn't push too hard. He's almost just said, if one of you goes, one of you has to stay here. You can't both push on and leave us, you know, short at the back, which again just balanced, you know, that sort of transition between attack and defence a little bit better. And when you saw it in the Watford game, we said at the time, we're trying to pass the ball through the eye of the needle, and it wasn't quite working. Against Southampton, it did him, and then the first goal was the best example of the way Gerrard wants us to play really working finally, you know, really sharp, incisive passing. We pulled them apart with three moves, yeah. Great turn and a brilliant finish. It's just a class team goal.
Because we've been guilty when we've played out the back. There's kind of not much tempo there to get things going, but it's a lot more in that final third, a lot more snappier,
yeah.
And
yeah,
you know, passing with tempo and more precision. Yeah. Precision.
Not just tempo. If you look at the weight on those two passes that went into Watkins, first of all, Coutinho fires that ball in the Ings, and Ings, you know, worst players wouldn't even control that ball. Ings gets it, and then he does a nice like reverse pass inside to Watkins, and it's at pace as well. And Watkins' turn, you won't see it better. I mean,
isn't it?
Yeah, nobody's. I mean, I was looking at the other side of the screen as well. Whenever he turned, he filled me completely, and then he's just left with the keeper. And again, great finish from him.
Yeah, I mean, the second goal just before half time, Luiz appearing where he did. That's what I'm saying about he's got more license to move in that kind of. I mean, he's the bottom of the diamond, but that the base of the diamond is wider. It's got, you know, it's basically those three, isn't it? It's Ramsey, yeah. Luiz, and McGinn. He's got more of a license to make sure there isn't gaps. He's not just like sitting back on the centre circle, because if he does that, then that potentially does, you know, for their out ball, gives them a lot of field to run in. So he's kind of getting up, and obviously with Ramsey and McGinn sometimes exercising caution, if there is, you know, say the wide fullbacks going forward, he's got more of a license to kind of run in and get involved. And he has been, I mean, he appears on the left a lot. He does, his heat map will be interesting to view, because he does get around nowadays, Luiz. But the important thing about this performance was there was no catastrophic mistakes, which yeah. were, you know, two sloppy passes in the previous game against Brighton just undermined his performance up to that mm-hmm. point.
I mean,
that's been the frustration, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is the point you make. How frustrating must it be to manage Luiz or even play with him, because he can put in a performance like he did against Southampton there, and he just, everything he did was good. I mean, there's even before one of the goals in the second half, he was on the edge of the box willing to take a shot, and there was no hesitation at all. He hit the shot and it was blocked before it went out. I think it was McGinn to make the run into the box. But I mean, this is the thing. I mean, it's not a case of, you know, you're singling out Luiz for criticism because of his ability or anything else. It's because of those catastrophic mistakes, like you said. I mean, the frustration must be off the chart. Jared just goes, just be that consistent from now on, and, you know, the place is nailed down.
I mean, as we said previously, it's like unforced errors. It's like mistakes that don't...
It's just
we're talking about
relax,
he's got simple passes to make.
And speaking of making the pass, what a ball from Chambers for the goal. I mean, the first goal was a great move. The second goal is as good, if not better. The little clip ball with the outside of his foot and then Coutinho's weight of pass just across the goal for Luis, who couldn't miss, frankly. It's a brilliant goal.
The irony of a goal that included two Brazilians, one with the assist, one with the goal. The irony is the most Brazilian thing about that move was his initial ball. I mean, it's like bringing back memories of Pelé in the 70s and Socrates in the 80s.
It was even a little bit of Merson about it, I thought, because it was with the outside of his foot, and Merson used to always use that.
The imagination as well, to get that height up and down as well. You wondered at the time what he was doing, then you just seen it all come together.
Yeah, I mean, somebody on Twitter said to me when I made the Brazilian analogy on Twitter about Chambers being the most Brazilian thing on the field, said, what, from a player you dismissed as just any old player who had a few games at DM for Arsenal, when in fact he was Fulham's player of the season when he did play central midfield? Well, we were having the discussion of Chambers, is he the solution at DM for Villa? And we thought, well, rather than have the player of the season of a relegated Fulham team, by the way, it's not really a good sign when your DMs gets you relegated. We were talking about that isn't the solution for Aston Villa with their ambition and where they're going, is not to play, let's say, a defender in that CDM role, because you only play that when there's an injury crisis, don't you? It's not like your solution.
And we're all for that. I'm all for versatility, and it's great that you've got, you know, centre-backs who can play on the ball, but you don't want to be reliant on him. But, you know, in that instance, you kind of go, fair play, mate. That's a brilliant ball. Yeah. And then, you know, a minute later or so, Coutinho, you know, he'd already missed, you know, a couple of chances where Forster had made a great save. He'd flashed like an absolute rocket about an inch past the post, which would have been a brilliant goal. And then obviously Watkins' little flick on sent him clear, and he'd kind of done the hard work. You know, Coutinho was through. He sits Forster down. He said, just run round him, roll it into the empty net. He sort of tried to clip it in the far post and went narrowly wide. But, you know, the game could and should have been absolutely dead at halftime.
Yeah.
Luckily, of course, we came out after the start of the second half and just blitzed them, didn't we? It was done.
Within 10 minutes, the game was over, 4-0.
Yeah.
It's one of those where there's a good chance that's going to be the full-time result, because normally 4-0 is when teams really take their foot off the gas.
And we kind of did, really. You know, we'd missed a few chances in the first half. Ings had come close before we even got he got his goal. And strangely, Coutinho, actually, his finish was the hardest of the chances he had. It was a really cheeky goal. He sits about three or four, at least, Southampton defenders
on the arse. Yeah, so much traffic in front of him, wasn't
it? Through Forster's legs. Really cheeky goal. And obviously, and the fourth was just a brilliant team goal again. That's the sort of end product we've been hoping for to see from Cash for quite a while. You know, really bombing on, get to the byline, deliver a great ball. And you know when you're giving service like that, as we've all said about him, if you give him good service, he's going to score you goals.
Yeah.
And then, as you said, at 4-0, it's kind of game over. And I think Gerrard was a little bit nitpicky after the game, that he would have liked to have seen us control the game from there. You know, we let Southampton have a lot of the ball, but they didn't do much with it, bar one big chance that Che Adams had. And obviously Martinez, who, to be fair to him, didn't have much to do when called upon, made a world-class save. But I think Gerrard was saying, I wanted at 4-0 to see us just control the game, have the ball, see it out very easily. But actually, we just sort of held him at arm's length. It was almost like an away performance.
Yeah, it was interesting. The Ings interview after the game, he seemed more disappointed in the performance than he was with the score, which was kind of, it shows that they're obviously, there's a level they're working to.
Yes.
And we're not there yet, which is exciting.
No, I'd agree with that.
And encouraging.
I suppose in a way, it was a little bit like the Leeds game, in that we just blitzed them in short bursts. But of course, because we were much more solid and Southampton just didn't show much going forward or didn't cause us many problems, we had that control of the game that, frankly, we should have had against Leeds. You know, we just went bang, bang, bang in a sort of a 15-minute period at the end of the first half, start of the second. And that's exactly what we should have done against Leeds. I remember we said if Villa had come out second half and got the next goal against Leeds, we'd have won that game.
Because Gerrard did admit he made an adjustment at halftime so they wouldn't be so open to that Leeds counter. And that, I think, that took away our
threat.
Menace going forward. Yeah,
and then it was kind of like, you know, slippers in the pipe for the last half an hour, which is very, very rare at Villa Park in recent years.
It would have been nice to see the players that came on, sort of, you know, one of them get a goal. It would have been nice to see either Sanson, Bailey or Buendia, just to sort of keep that taken over, because Southampton whenever it got to that stage, they did start to break the momentum up, lying down. There was a player, Ashley Young, that I think was Broha. Ashley, he did a horrendous dive towards the end, wasted another couple of minutes. It was just, again, when teams sort of do that and break up Villa's momentum, you can just see the time ticking away. But in this case, there was an argument that Villa had took their foot off the gas as well.
And before the game, Sky had flagged it up. I think it was Gary Neville who'd said it was about on 60, 65 minutes, nearly every game, Southampton have had a player go down so they can have a breather. It was a really interesting little subplot during the game. I was kind of waiting for it to happen, but of course it didn't really make much difference because we were 4-0 up. So it never really came, but it has been happening in the previous games where they'll take on the fluids, they'll all go over to the manager while someone basically will feign injury.
Went against Leeds, it wasn't feigning in this injury. They were all blowing out of their arse and all lying down with cramp, weren't they? But, like three or four of them.
It was good to see the guys come on when they did. I actually thought at 4-0, having seen a little brief cameo at Brighton, I thought they would have given Irogbenham, a little 10-15 minute cameo again, just to get him involved. Because, in previous years, certainly, in the sort of the 90s, early 2000s, that's when Villa of old would have given the kids a game. When you think, well, we've the job's done here. Now's a good time to blood a youngster. But ultimately, we've got so many guys who need game time that actually bringing Sanson, Bailey, Buendia on was, it's good. The fact that we can bring, I don't know what the maths would be, but probably the best part of 70-odd million off the bench is a sign of progress.
No, exactly. And these players need minutes to keep them motivated as well.
Especially Buendia, who consider himself quite unlucky to have obviously lost his place, because he's probably been one of our best players since Christmas.
Yeah. I was about to say he's arguably our better performer in that kind of run. The miserable run that we don't even have to think about anymore.
Hopefully.
any comments on Sanson?
Just sort of steady. He had a couple of really nice touches, actually, where he kind of picked the ball up and held his own well. Bailey had a couple of little bursts. He actually had a bit of a half chance and tried to be flash and lob the goalie and made a bit of a mess of that. And Buendia did what he did. He kind of came on and controlled the game, which was good.
Yeah, I mean, Sanson and Bailey only had 7 touches each, so there wasn't that much. There wasn't that much time for impact, like less than 20 minutes, wasn't there?
I just don't know what impact Sanson would make. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong when he came on. I mean, I'm not digging him out, but he's not a player that's going to come on and do something, especially at 4-0. So, I mean, if that turns out to be his job, if it is to just settle things down, that's something valuable. But I just don't see what he was doing.
Straight in with the Samsung kill.
One thing I will give them collectively credit for was that we'd seen
you're going to get stick for that, Phil Shaw.
The obviously the game at Villa Park last year and plenty of previous games, and he comes with a big warning sign. But actually, we kept James Ward-Prowse very, very quiet. They had multiple corners, set pieces, etc. But Villa handled it well. But actually, a team have done a good job on a creative player when he's taking the ball off the centre-backs. Now, we've accused our players of it down the years for a long time with likes of Grealish, etc., taking the ball off the centre-backs too deep. And Ward-Prowse was always playing around the halfway line, which meant didn't allow him to actually get into dangerous areas to hurt us.
On paper, that Southampton midfield should have been like Villa's kryptonite. I mean, you've Romeo in there, really tough
strong,
tackling, shithouse, whatever you want to call him. I mean, I said I would take him at Villa, no problem. And I think Armstrong and Ward-Prowse in there as well.
Had a good game, I thought.
Yeah, they're good
players.
They're
a very tidy team. They just didn't quite have the spark that they've had in the last few weeks. I think it was just a bad day at the office for them. But you can see why, when they kind of get up ahead of steam against opposition, they can actually do them some damage.
But, Southampton have been a nemesis over the years.
For a long time. So, we hadn't beaten them before this one. I think the last win was August 04 under O'Leary when Carlton Cole scored on his debut. It'd been that long.
Yeah.
It's the biggest win over the Saints since, I think it was like December 99. I think we played him in a League Cup game. It's been that long.
Yep. So, it's always, it's kind of people don't realise that how bad we have been against Southampton in recent years.
Yeah, especially since they sort of came back up from their little relegation woes in the mid-2000s.
Right. Start of the game.
Danny Ings has now scored 6 goals in 8 appearances against former clubs. So, moral of the story, don't sell him, Villa, especially somebody you're going to be playing against.
Yeah, the lesson is he's not very sentimental then.
It was always in the stars, wasn't it? Especially with that record, and players against their old clubs normally score if they're a striker. Muted celebration as well, out of respect.
Cracking goal though.
Right, speaking of Mr. Ings, he is in the burning question of the week, which is, has the Watkins-Ings can't play together line of thinking, is that done and dusted now? And where does Buendia fit in because of that? Because he's obviously been a full guy to the reintroduction of Watkins and Ings as a pair?
I mean, clearly they can play together. You know, the fact that all your front players scored in a game is a real plus. I think we'll probably judge them against, with respect to Southampton, much better opposition. You know, we've got Tottenham, Arsenal, Liverpool to come to Villa Park in the coming weeks. So we'll probably judge them against that. But it's positive signs.
Yeah, the interesting thing with the question itself was something I didn't even think about. And then it got to the stage, because you thought, well, you know, Watkins was injured at the start of the season, then kind of Ings was out. So there was never, ever a chance of them having a bit of momentum together. And so it's something you never really thought about. You saw it playing out on Twitter. You think, oh, you know, they can't play together. And you just think, well, no, actually, they're two of our better players, two of our most expensive signings ever. It's not a, this isn't like kind of Lampard and Gerrard playing the same England team or whatever. It's like, how can Aston Villa, who have gone a couple of seasons where they've had one fit striker, suddenly start moaning about having two good strikers and then coming to the conclusion that they can't play them both at the same time? It's like, it's a weird kind of warped reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
But it got to the stage where we, even on this podcast, we started to think, yeah, maybe. I mean, I remember Dan was saying he paid no attention to this debate, and then he suddenly found himself thinking, and we were saying, yeah, maybe it might not work and there's a better way of you, because we need to toughen up, I think, was one of our problems. And, you know, yeah, that suggests that maybe you go for that extra midfielder. And, you know, Buendia certainly, despite his diminutive size, gets around and does help Watkins press up the
top. As I said earlier, he's a really unfortunate fall guy in the system. But I think it's the first time we've actually seen Watkins and Ings in the last two games obviously play in their positions as strikers. You know, previously it was like, we'll try and shoehorn them into a front three. That's not really what they want to do. You know, when they actually play off each other, you can see they're clearly both technically good players, and I think we're finding a way to get the service right. I like the fact that Coutinho's in behind them.
Yeah, we got into a position where we're kind of overloading the front, and that was upsetting the balance, especially in midfield.
Yeah, we look a lot more balanced all of a sudden in the last two games.
What I would say is, I mean, especially after last season, Watkins' first season, I didn't really have him down as a confidence player. I thought Watkins was always at a level. You know, he always backed himself. Mm-hmm. This season, you have seen that he is like 90% of strikers. He is a confidence player. So his touch and things, I mean, everything has just clicked back into the Watkins of last season, if not even better than the Watkins of last season. I mean, he wasn't doing that turn last season. And I think, now you see, I mean, Ings stays roughly at the same level. I don't see him being affected by confidence the same way. But
he's got that maturity, hasn't he? Yeah. At this level, that
now that Watkins is on fire, you have to keep them both playing.
Yeah, but yeah, it's. I think we're now just finding ourselves in an alien position where we've got more than just 11 good players. Mm-hmm. So this does open up, proper debates that you can have at your pre-match pint over who plays. It's actually a luxury that we can have legitimate conversations like that
options,
now,
haven't we? You know, Buendia, you know, where does he fit in now? It's kind of like, well, we all know he does fit in. We know what he can do. So it's just a case of when he gets his opportunities, he's going to have to take them, and they will come.
And Bailey is at the moment just a bit part player, isn't he?
He's going to have to become like an Adama, isn't he? He's going to have to become like your sort of, I think when he first arrived, I think it was after the Everton game, we called him like the nuclear option. It's like, when you need a bit of Crash Bangwalla, a bit of like pace and a bit of power and directness.
Electricity.
Yeah. That's what he's for. And he tried, he had a couple of moments, a couple of good runs. He's just going to need game times. But at the moment, you look at our system and how everything's working and the way things are going and our possible sort of variety in the system. And it's like, if you're going to change shape, you bring Buendia in for probably one of the strikers if you want to change the balance. So it's, I don't know where Bailey would start for us other than if there's injuries.
Right, let's close out the show. Just want to say thank you to the My Old Man Said patrons for supporting the show, and we will be seeing you soon in Match Club if you also want to join us and get access to Match Club and a few other things that are on the horizon, which will be announced soon, as well as the extra podcasts. I've still got a back catalogue shed load to get out because I've been away. But thank you very much to James Brown for signing up as a patron. I think it was just a renewal. And Stephen Arnold as well, a warm welcome to him. And also to Paul Corbett for signing up as an annual member. If you're signing up as an annual member, you get 2 months free, which is 15% off. Just go to myomansaid.com and click on the patron link there. Also, please do spread the word on the show. If you see the latest edition, i.e. this one, come out on Twitter, please do give it a retweet or a share on Facebook. And also put your notifications on whatever podcast app you are using. If you listen on Acast, I think Acast are discontinuing their podcast app soon, because they just want to concentrate on the other side of things rather than, you know, everybody coming up with podcast apps. I think they just think that most people listen on Apple, Spotify, Google, whatever. So why waste resources on that? So bear that in mind if that's what you're using to listen on. I will start putting up links for other things from now on in. So I will find out if you're a patron and your Acast app is linked to the extra My Old Man Said patron podcast channel, then I will inquire how that sits now and what will happen. I know you can, like, for example, hook it up to Apple and most podcast apps, but Spotify doesn't allow private RSS feeds. So any problems, just drop me a mail and we will get to the root of it. And speaking of Twitter, do follow the @MyOldManSaid account, which eventually will become the main My Old Man Said podcast Twitter address. So do follow that. Any final words before we go?
No, just keep the momentum going. Yep. A couple of interesting ones, obviously Leeds and West Ham, kind of on paper difficult games, but ones I think we can get stuff in.
Yeah, I think as long as we are playing to our full potential and cutting out the silly mistakes, I think that midfield tweak has been fundamental in our potential, but we need to test it out. I mean, it's against West Ham, that'll be interesting to
see how it goes. With Leeds, obviously, with the new manager, you don't know if they'll get any kind of bounce or if they'll be bang up for it or if they've had their wind knocked out of the sails.
Yeah, that's Leeds is Leeds. But West Ham, I think, is a legit test on the new kind of tweak of formation. Right, until our away trips, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.